Thursday, September 16th. And then I worked on the mail, and then quickly to the pool for 20 rounds up and down, because I knew I wouldn't get my exercise tonight, and I didn't want to miss the day. And the beauty parlor. And then a really interesting encounter with John and Helen Jean Secondary. Just back from Europe and working on the life of Beethoven, they brought me a gift. A small marble head of Augustus Caesar. Pirated out of Italy, it had been found in some construction building a home, and accompanying it, a letter in John Secondary's sonorous prose about the man and his time and history. I was charmed. I liked it better than the crown jewels. We talked about our documentary, about the difficult necessity of reducing the unique city of Washington to some similarity to Dimebox and Rosebud, to Mrs. John Citizen in her living room anywhere. I don't think we've quite gotten the solution yet, and it's such a major investment of hours and money. I want so much for it to be a success. We explored it for 2 hours, planned to meet again next Thursday, see the picture itself, and hope it would spawn ideas. And then I had a little time to work with Bess and Ashton and to watch Lyndon on TV in his address at the Smithsonian. That he has such a real affinity for the Smithsonian is one of the many facets of his very diverse makeup that delights me. It was a good speech, but not his best at all. It was his second of the day. First had been to the Washington World Conference on World Peace Through Law. Each one takes grinding effort. How do you know what is worth it? And then it was time for me to get off to what, for me, was the meat of the day, my trip to New York to be with Linda. She had already left. On the way out, I had a quick picture with Patty Perkins, who'd worked in the White House for 3 months. Her salary paid by her college, Mount Holyoke. Bess and Liz, Ashton and Patsy, are wonderful about using, absorbing, teaching, and thanking any of the free summer help we can get. And then I was off for New York. Arrived at the Carlton, Linda not there yet. I called home with a bad conscience to all my house guests. Ed Weisel and Bobby Lehman were in with the president, so I didn't interrupt, but asked the butler to take them a message that I had called to welcome them. And then I reached Mrs. Thielman and welcomed her and told her that I would look forward to seeing her tomorrow. Later, I found that Lennon had also asked Arthur Krim and Gus Wortham. He uses this old house. It was a calculated decision to come to New York, because when Lennon is having these stag dinners for the businessmen, although it gives me the night off, it is still a wonderful chance to have tea or a drink or coffee the next morning with important people from across the United States here for the dinner, whom I want to know better. So it was with keen regret that I passed up this chance to be with Linda Bird in New York. I'd have liked to talk to Dr. Frank Rose, president of the University of Alabama, about the state I love and its problems, to Mr. Lessing Rosenwald, the former chairman of Sears Roebuck, about all they've long been doing about beautification, and also perhaps would they consider, whenever they're putting in a suburban store with a big parking lot, planting a few more trees in it. And the Mr. Modi Spiegel, the second biggest mail order house in the United States, to thank him for what he's doing to the post office department, making an enormous donation to landscape it. The Beau Jones from Atlanta, just to send Anne my salutes for the anniversary of the Lady Bird special. To Mayor Jerome Kavanaugh, to congratulate him on the wonderful article in Was It Look or Life, on his very vital handling of the problems of the mayor of a big city. And I would really love to thank Walter Annenberg of Philadelphia for giving to the White House that portrait of an early Philadelphian, Benjamin Franklin, that hangs in the green room. But Linda leaving Sunday for a whole school year, a night in New York with her and Dave for a play, meant more to me. Dave had arrived before I was dressed, and in a minute Linda. And we had drinks looking out over the unbelievably beautiful view of New York, Central Park, the river, skyscrapers. At 52, I'm still as much in awe of it as at 21. And then we went down to Greenwich Village to a play called The Fantastics, to a small and rather crummy theater that held not more than 100 customers, and a stage about 4 feet square. But the 6 characters in the play jumped down into the well in front of it and around among the audience. It was an experience. With no stage settings, only 2 musical instruments, I believe, a harp and a piano. 1 change of costumes, imaginative but emphatically not expensive. I believe 1 man wore a union suit, dyed pink. They produced more magic than nearly anything I've seen this year. It was a sort of free verse, Our Town script, with some very memorable songs. One that you keep on humming, try to remember the kind of September. And a humorous one, Plant a Radish. It was a completely offbeat, out-of-my-life show. I'm glad Linda and Dave introduced me to it. Never would I have found it by myself. A few people did recognize me. Mostly they couldn't care less, which was just right for me and them. Outside, a few people did wave. And then I watched the people far more than they watched me. Girls in tight pants and short hair. Boys with beards and long hair. A race of their own, and welcome to it. You wonder what they do in the daylight. And what they do when they're 40 years old. We went to the Dardanelles for lunch. A small, quiet place, and I'm afraid the Secret Service kept any other possible customers out. And had shish kebab. By this time we were ravenous. And then back to the Carlisle after midnight, savoring what had been indeed an exotic, offbeat day for me. Good because it had been with Linda. Good because I had a chance to talk a little with Dave about commodities and the stock market, and how he dealt with grain and cattle and soybeans. It was not Linda wants me to know what he's like, what makes up his life. Linda had told me about her morning spent at Cook Elementary School, where she donated a $1,500 check she'd earned by writing the article for Look about her life in the White House, for landscaping the grounds at the school, and at the one across the street, Slater Langston. He'd planted a magnolia tree at one, set out a window box at the other, met a lot of second and third graders, made a little speech, got an offer of a job as a teacher, and left a book autographed by her daddy, in More Beautiful America, for their library, hopefully, if there ever is one. She departed with the word to the students to please take care of the landscaping when it was completed. She hadn't sounded very satisfied with her performance. It was only the next day when I read the papers that I decided that it was really great. She looked beautiful, sounded warm and gay, and useful. There was in the same day's paper a rather ugly article about First Lady's public projects, mass media are helping to subsidize same, my ABC documentary, and the probable 10,000 contribution to the beautification project. Then my article for Life and Life's donation of the park in Johnson City, the publication of Mrs. Johnson's book, Family Album, by McGraw-Hill, and McCall's article on it. I hope nothing worries me more than these did. I'm much more concerned about whether the Johnson City Park turns out to be a credit to Life and to us. It was a good, different day.